Rise up, Democrats. Rise up, Americans. This cannot stand.
Rise up and take a seat.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling there's something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, People Powered Radio. And 5 days a week, blanketing planet Earth on Radio Sputnik. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Particularly grateful to those of our streaming outlets today, as we're reminded once again how important streaming has become. We hope to be speaking shortly to Congressman Ted Deutch of Florida. He's one of the growing number of participants now, Democratic participants in the U.S. House, in the U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday, led by civil rights icon Congressman John Lewis of Georgia, at least initially. We've been watching dozens of speakers coming up one after another ever since, with the House in recess during this protest, during what has become a sit-in, an occupation, if you will, as they described it, as John Lewis described it. We hope to have the latest for you from the House floor, from Congressman Deutch directly. But frankly, this is all rather unprecedented in the U.S. House, and we're trying to make sense of it as we go here, not made any easier by the fact that the C-SPAN cameras were initially shut off, reportedly at the order of House Republicans. Among the stories we had hoped to cover today, Donald Trump gave what I guess we can call a major teleprompter speech? Is that
yes, a major teleprompted scripted speech about all the things that he doesn't like about Hillary.
Yeah, attacking Hillary Clinton. She gave her own major speech on the economy. And Marco Rubio, senator from Florida, who vowed to not run for re-election in the U.S. Senate for the state of Florida during his failed presidential campaign, back when he had said over and over again how much he hated working in the Senate, that he has the worst voting record of any U.S. senator. He announced that he will run for re-election after all, go figure, to the U.S. Senate. Also, we've got some new numbers in from California, where the counting of vote-by-mail ballots and provisional ballots from the June 7th Democratic primary continues. And as observers attempt to watch that counting and try to ensure that every properly cast provisional ballot for president is actually counted in that tally, at least included in that tally, we'll see how much of that we can get to today. So we're following a lot of stuff. But first, we spoke about the four different gun safety measures that Republicans allowed to come up for a vote in the U.S. Senate on Tuesday in the wake of Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy's 15-hour filibuster last week, demanding that Republicans allow any votes at all on these measures. Republicans who have been in thrall to the National Rifle Association for God knows how many years at this point. And finally, Chris Murphy was successful in that filibuster, in that he got the vote, in that they allowed the vote to move forward. I think it was on Tuesday. Two Republican and two Democratic measures, all four failed. But as we noted on yesterday's broadcast, a compromise version of the legislation was being put forward, being put together by moderate Republican Susan Collins of Maine. Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has agreed to allow that effort to come forward for a vote on the Senate at some point as early as this week. Some vulnerable GOP senators are said to be getting on board with centrist Democrats behind this particular bill. We don't know if it's going to have enough actual support from either Republicans or Democrats to get passed at this point. But it does seem as if this means Republicans are feeling some pressure here. The legislation that Collins is trying to put together, this compromise legislation, as it's being referred to, would bar people on the no-fly list and the select T list from purchasing guns. That's sort of a subset of the terror watch list. But they would be able to appeal the decision if they were blocked from buying guns. They'd be able to appeal the decision under this proposal and have their attorney's fees covered if it becomes clear that they were wrongly blocked from buying a gun. That legislation would also let law enforcement know when someone who has been on the broader terrorism watch list within the last 5 years, when somebody like that buys a gun. The FBI or the Department of Homeland Security would be informed about that. It's a narrower provision than the one that was introduced back in 2015 after the massacre out here in San Bernardino that was introduced by Senator Dianne Feinstein at the time. That barred a larger group of individuals on the terror watch list from purchasing guns at all in the first place. And that was akin to the measure that was one of the measures that was struck down this week in the U.S. Senate. So far, Republican Congressman Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Jeff Flake of Arizona, Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire, who is facing a tough reelection battle this fall, they all have said they support this compromise legislation. And Republicans are said to be seeking the support of Republican Senator Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania, Rob Portman from Ohio, and Marco Rubio of the state of Florida. Some Democrats are also said to be coming on board, like Senator Heidi Heitkamp. And, well, basically what Senator Graham has said is that, you know, when it comes to the idea of abridging the rights to buy assault weapons, not sure that's in the Constitution as it's believed by the NRA and the Republicans, but he's saying that, look, we're building in due process to this measure. If someone is wrongly on the list, they can get off. It might be an inconvenience in the short term, but that it's less inconvenient than seeing something like what we saw in Orlando. So it is absolutely the lowest hanging of low-hanging fruit when it comes to gun legislation. But maybe there is some momentum in the U.S. Senate. Maybe something is moving forward in that regard. Something might be different. Maybe this, you know, after the Orlando massacre. And so we'll see in the U.S. Senate. That's where the U.S. Senate is right now. But meanwhile, as I've been reporting, that even if something happened in the U.S. Senate, there has been no sign whatsoever that any legislation, even if it was passed in the U.S. Senate, would be passed by the U.S. House, where they have not been allowing any votes on gun-related measures at all, and there is no filibuster option for House Democrats the way there is in the U.S. Senate. Also, Republicans control a lot more of the U.S. House than they do of the U.S. Senate. The majority in the House is even larger than it is in the Senate. So even if such a vote were allowed in the U.S. House, it seems unlikely that that would get passed there by the NRA-controlled Republican Congress members. But who knows? Something might be different this time. Something seemed different this time, at least right after the massacre in Orlando, when House Democrats protested in the U.S. House after Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan had called for a moment of silence following the deaths of 49 people at that LGBT nightclub in Orlando. More than 100 people were shot there with a legally purchased, high-powered, military-style, semi-automatic assault rifle. They were shot by a single domestic terrorist who had been interviewed on several occasions by the FBI regarding outspoken support for Muslim extremists. So after that moment of silence that was called for by Paul Ryan, all but, I think, 16 seconds long, the Democrats at the time in the U.S. House protested that a moment of silence was not enough. They demanded action on gun violence, actual action, actual legislation, not just yet another moment of silence, as we've seen after so many of these things. But up until today in the U.S. House, the Republicans were having none of it. But now they are staging, well, I guess it's an all-out sit-in. late Wednesday morning, about 11:30 Eastern time. Lawmakers sat down cross-legged on the floor after civil rights icon John Lewis. He was beaten to a pulp almost within an inch of his life. Back on Bloody Sunday, back in the during the Bloody Sunday marches in Selma, Alabama, he marched with Martin Luther King. He is an icon. He is a legend. He has led many sit-ins over the decades, but this would be the first in the U.S. House, and at least to my knowledge, and frankly, since the Republicans have subsequently tried at least to shut off the C-SPAN cameras. For some reason, they don't want people to see what's going on there. Since they've cut it off, I'm going to go ahead and play John Lewis's speech here in full, about 5 minutes, that took place just before this remarkable protest in the U.S. House on Wednesday. Here's Congressman John Lewis.
On occasion, Mr. Speaker, I have had what I call an executive session with myself. For months, even for years, through several sessions of Congress, I wondered what would bring this body to take action, what would finally make Congress do what is right, what is just, what the people of this country have been demanding, and what is long overdue. We have lost hundreds and thousands of innocent people to gun violence. Tiny the children, babies, students, and teachers, mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, daughters and sons, friends and neighbors. And what has this body done? Mr. Speaker, nothing. Not one thing. We have turned a deaf ears. We have turned deaf ears to the blood of the innocent and the concern of our nation. We are blind to a crisis. Mr. Speaker, where is the heart of this body? Where is our soul? Where is our moral leadership? Where is our courage? Those who work on bipartisan solution are pushed aside. Those who pursue common sense improvement are beaten down. Reason is criticized. Obstruction is praised. Newtown, Grover, Charleston, Orlando. What is the tipping point? Are we blind? Can we see? How many more mothers, how many more fathers need to shed tears of grief before we do something? We were elected to lead, Mr. Speaker. We must be headlights and not taillights. We cannot continue to stick our heads in the sand and ignore the reality of mass gun violence in our nation. Deadly mass shootings are becoming more and more frequent. Mr. Speaker, this is a fact. It is not an opinion. We must remove the blinders. The time for silence and patience is long gone. We are calling on the leadership of the House to bring common sense gun control legislation to the House floor. Give us a vote. Let us vote. We came here to do our job. We came here to work. The American people demand an action. Do we have the courage? Do we have raw courage to make at least a down payment on ending gun violence in America? We can no longer wait. We can no longer be patient. So today we come to the well of the House to dramatize the need for action. Not next month, not next year, but now, today. Sometimes you have to do something out of the ordinary. Sometimes you have to make a way out of no way. We have been too quiet for too long. There comes a time when you have to say something, when you have to make a little noise. When you have to move your feet. This is the time. Now is the time to get in the way. The time to act is now. We will be silent no more. The time for silence is over. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
That was Congressman and civil rights icon John Lewis from Georgia saying that Democrats will be silent no more. Sometimes you have to do something out of the ordinary. Now is the time to get in the way. Democrats are, in fact, getting in the way of Republican plans. House Speaker Paul Ryan was set to introduce, finally, after all of these years, an alternative to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. That has now been put on hold as the House remains in recess. Since that speech, well, since shortly after that speech by John Lewis, right afterwards, the mic was yielded back to the speaker and then to Congressman John Larson of Connecticut. And then John Lewis once again for a minute, and then Steny Hoyer, the minority leader in the U.S. House, before everything came to an end, before it was all gaveled to a close. Here's what it sounded like as this sit-in got started after John Lewis spoke and just before the House was entirely shut down by Republicans before this moment of occupation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank my colleagues and for all of America that's listening. You just heard the soul of the United States Congress speak. The soul of this nation cries out for a vote. We are gathered here on this floor today to accomplish a single goal. We implore, we ask our colleagues, our colleague from Georgia stood on that side to appeal to the better angels on that side of the aisle to provide us with the simple dignity that every American is calling for, a vote. And with that, I yield back to my colleague from Georgia.
My friend, my brother, for yielding. Now is the time for us to find a way to dramatize it, to make it real. We have to occupy the floor of the House until there's action.
Rise up, Democrats. Rise up, Americans. This cannot stand. We will occupy this floor. We will no longer be denied a right to vote. I yield to our majority whip and leader. We sit down.
The gentleman's time has expired. Pursuant to clause 12, parent A of Rule 1, chair declares the House recess till the hour of 12 noon.
And that was it. And the House was then gaveled into recess. Cameras in the House were turned off, so the protest was not recorded, at least for a few minutes. It came back on a few minutes later, just before noon. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas, Republican, gaveled the House back into session. He led members through a morning prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance, during which Democratic members on the floor who had been sitting down cross-legged, they stood up for the pledge and the prayer, but they said they would not leave the well of the House after those ceremonies. The Republican, Congressman Poe, said the House is not in a state of order due to the presence of members in the well. And then he gaveled the House back into recess, and the C-SPAN cameras were again turned off. Poe had his call for order was barely audible, according to The Hill, in the chamber over the Democrats' chance of no bill, no break. C-SPAN's anchor at the time said, "We'd love to show you what's happening in the House right now, but those cameras are controlled by the House." And indeed, those cameras that you see on C-SPAN, those are not controlled by C-SPAN themselves. They're controlled by the House Administrative Committee, which is now controlled by Republicans. And they were ordered to turn off those cameras. Since then and throughout the day, we have been able then, it took a while, but we have been able to follow what's been going on in the well of the U.S. House. thanks to Facebook video, being taken on cell phones on the Periscope app. We've been able to follow what's going on as C-SPAN has been streaming that coverage. They have said they've made quite clear that they would love to carry what's going on, but they're not able to do it because they don't have control over the regular cameras. So we're watching streaming video all day on C-SPAN at this rather extraordinary moment, in truth. And who was it? Scott Larson,
Representative Scott Larson of California. Scott Peterson of California, who's running this on his Periscope app.
With his cell phone,
which is an amazing thing that the revolution of social media, you know, we always talk about how it has made these conversations possible. It has helped folks from other areas of the country come together and say, hey, look what's happening over here. Yeah, it's happening over here, too. Now it has reached the floor of the House.
And it wouldn't be seen at all, frankly, if it weren't for that. House Democrats are now asking viewers to call their Congress member to tell your Congress, your member of Congress, that you would like a vote, at least a vote. It may not pass, but you would at least like a vote on these measures.
And this is also, I think, real quick, the fact that they mention that they are occupying the House floor. That is a testament to the Occupy movement, that is now the word that they use for what they're doing, which is literally occupying the House floor.
House Democrat apparently texted to Bloomberg's reporter Sahil Kapoor just after the occupation started, saying at the time that there were more than 50 Democrats there. Saying that, quote, we just decided there was no other way to get action. We can't filibuster in the House. The Democratic lawmaker apparently went on to tell Kapoor that Democrats are all in. Leadership is totally supportive. That's a quote, totally supportive of the sit-in. And Kapoor concludes that this may not end in a hurry. And indeed, the Senate Democrats themselves put out a tweet saying whether we're standing to filibuster or sitting in protest, Senate and House Democrats are taking action to end gun violence. Hashtag silence no more. Congressman Ted Deutch from Florida has been tweeting all of this. He has been part of the sit-in there. That congressman said, I'm on the House floor right now for the victims of the Orlando shooting because those 49 and too many others can't be. Hashtag no more silence. Hashtag enough. And it included a photo of the faces of the 49 murdered clubgoers from Orlando, Florida. Ted Deutch will join us momentarily. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Congressman Deutch to find out what's going on, what the Democrats are thinking, how long they've been planning this. Most importantly, I guess, how long they are prepared to stay and hold up the House business. What are their plans? What's their game? We'll find out right after this. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is your Bradcast. Hey, it's Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Sit-in in the U.S. House of Representatives kicked off earlier on Wednesday by Congressman John Lewis of Georgia. And now dozens of Democrats have been coming up and speaking, which we only know about thanks to a Periscope video currently being shot by Congressman Scott Peters with his cell phone, Democrat from California. Earlier, it was Facebook video that was being streamed by C-SPAN because the Republicans have ordered the cameras turned off. They gaveled the U.S. House to a recess and ordered the cameras and the microphones turned off. And so we're just watching streaming video trying to keep up with what is actually going on there as this sit-in by Democrats demanding a vote, only a vote, on gun legislation following what happened in Orlando, Florida about 2 weeks ago in the U.S. House. They don't have the filibuster the way the U.S. Senate does, so they're inventing their own way right now, which is, I think, the first time there has been what is being described as a sit-in, a literal sit-in in the well of the U.S. House of Representatives. One of those congressmen sitting in from the state of Florida in this case, who has been sitting there all day, has been tweeting this all day as it has grown larger, is Congressman Ted Deutch from Florida's 21st district, which I think will soon be the 22nd district as they're restructuring the way the districts work there in Florida. Congressman Deutch has been a representative for the great state of Florida since 2010, and he joins us now from the House. Congressman, welcome back to the broadcast.
It's great to be with you again. Thank you.
Good to have you here. Glad we could give you an excuse to stretch your legs, to walk off the floor. As I understand, you've been in the sit-in. You've just walked off the floor to talk to us today. Is that correct?
That's right. It's been over 3 hours now. The numbers have, I think, only grown. We're at one count about 75 House members and a constant stream of senators filing in to show their support as well.
Yeah, you've been tweeting about that on the Twitters, and you've thanked, let's see here, Senator Jeff Merkley, Ron Wyden, Senator Bennett, Senator Warren, Senator Casey, Bill Nelson, Al Franken. All of them are they actually coming in and sitting in, or are they just coming in, giving their support, and heading back to the U.S. Senate right now?
No, most of them actually have come in and have stayed for a while. I think they understand what's happening here. Brad, we don't have a filibuster option mm-hmm. in the House. We have all kinds of rules that govern what happens here. And when the leadership of the House will not allow us to have a vote and will twist the rules in whatever way they deem necessary to prevent us from voting on the most basic gun safety legislation, mm-hmm. then we're forced to find other ways to try to bring that vote forward. And that's what we're doing today. And I think it's been successful in helping to raise the issue. What's astonishing to me is that the Speaker apparently is so distraught at the idea of members of the House speaking out on behalf of the people who sent them there that he has told C-SPAN to turn off their cameras. Which is why, if you turn on C-SPAN, you can't even see what's happening now. So it's been great on the House floor. But the fact is, the American people deserve to see this as well.
Well, they do, and I know there are certain rules that C-SPAN and a lot of people don't understand that C-SPAN does not control their own cameras in the U.S. House. That's controlled, I guess, by the House Administration Committee, which is currently run by Republicans. They have to have their cameras on when the House is in session. But is there
right.
a rule that they must turn it off when the House is out of session, is in recess, or is that a decision by the Republicans?
No. It isn't, and in fact, if you happen to turn on C-SPAN, you will see that they are going out of their way, both on their network and on Twitter and social media, to point out that they the reason they are not showing this is because they were told to turn off the cameras. So it is it's disgusting that we've not had a single vote on gun safety legislation. It is embarrassing, however, for House leadership. That they have that they're so embarrassed by their own record that they've told C-SPAN to cease broadcasting because they don't want any more attention brought to the shameful inaction.
And I note that it has fallen to Congress members to become the broadcasters here. Congressman Scott Peters, I believe, is actually shooting all of this with his cell phone on the House floor. C-SPAN may now be carrying some of that, but has the Republicans ordered you guys to turn off your cell phones and not broadcast what's going on and not take photos?
Sure. And there are rules that you're not supposed to use your cell phone on the floor of the House. But there are, but those rules, I think, also require House members to take action when the leadership acts in a way that is not in the best interest of the American people. And turning off C-SPAN, I think, and giving the American people an opportunity to actually see what's happening is a perfectly legitimate thing to do, Representative Peters. Others I know have been broadcasting. But it all gets back to the fundamental issue, which is this. There is no rational explanation for refusing to take action to keep guns out of the hands of suspected terrorists and violent criminals? None. There's nobody, there's no one who can look you in the eye and say, you know what, I understand what you're saying, but we think that it's more important for suspected terrorists to be able to get guns or for criminals to be able to get guns without a background check, and therefore we're not going to let this go forward. That's why there's been no vote. There's been no vote because they don't want to have to go on record and vote against the interests of their constituents and vote in support of the gun law.
What would be the specific... What would be the specific bills that you guys would be calling for, would be voting on, if they would allow you to hold a vote at this point?
Sure. Well, there are two. Look, I've been focused on gun safety issues since I arrived here and went to work on the Judiciary Committee. There are all sorts of things that we could be debating. But right now, the two pieces of legislation that have overwhelming support, that make the most sense at this moment, are, number one, a bipartisan bill that Congressman Thompson and Congressman King, Peter King, have introduced together, a bipartisan bill that says that if you are a suspected terrorist, if you're on the terror watch list, no-fly list, that you cannot purchase a firearm. That's the first bill. It's very straightforward. And after the terrorist attack and the attack on the LGBT community in Orlando, in my state of Florida, that is the least that we could do to honor the memory of those who were slain. That's the first. And the second is simply a bill that would say that if you get a background check when you buy a gun at a gun store, mm-hmm. then just because you buy a gun at a gun show or online, you shouldn't be able to avoid that background check. We should have universal background checks. Again, this is not controversial. And it's so hard for people to understand how it is that Congress cannot even engage in a debate on the House floor that we're forced to have a sit-in just to talk about the most common sense gun safety measures.
It's Congressman, I know that the NRA-controlled GOP, and I'm putting it nicely, frankly, has failed for years to take any of this action that you're talking about for gun legislation. But it seems they have not been held accountable for that, even though some 90% of Americans, as you suggest, agree with these pretty low-hanging fruit pieces of legislation you're talking about. So, I mean, despite the obscene number of repeated mass shootings over the years and in your own state of Florida just a week or two ago, these same GOPers who are blocking action, they continue to get reelected. What does that tell us? Why does that happen, Congressman?
Well, I'll tell you, Brad, I'll tell you what I said on the House floor earlier. I recounted an experience I had just as I was getting ready to fly back to Washington from Florida. I was walking through the airport and overheard on one of the TVs a commentator on a cable news station who said, you know, the reason that they're not able to pass these fundamentally simple, common sense gun safety measures, the reason that they're not able to do it is because they don't have the same intensity on their side that the gun lobby has and that they do on the other side. And I think what's happening today is for the first time on the House floor, what's happening is mirroring what you're seeing around the country, which is that there is this growing intensity that we cannot allow this status quo of moment of silence followed by more deafening silence and the failure to take action, that we're not going to allow that to continue. So I actually do think that this is a moment where people are going to start to be held accountable, and they have to be.
Was this sit-in today by Democrats, was this something that was planned before today? John Lewis, civil rights icon, sort of came up, gave a speech, and then everybody followed in sitting down. Did he just do this on his own? Is this something that was planned? And how long, what are the plans for this? How long will this sit-in go on, as you see it, Congressman Deutsch?
Well, the idea came up last night, and the thinking was that Congressman Lewis, who is, I think safe to say, a hero to so many of us, was going to speak this morning during the early morning session, and that we simply weren't going to leave the floor when he was finished. And in fact, at noon, when the speaker came in to gavel us back into session, They were forced to abandon the session, and we've been having to sit in since. How long is it going to go on? Look, I think the Republican leadership is just going to have to decide whether they're prepared to make an end. And the only way that they can make an end is if they have the sergeant of arms enforce the rules. In other words, if they want to come back in and bring the House back into session and ask for order, and the only way to have order is for the sergeant of arms to haul people off, I guess that's one option. I can't imagine that that's an option that they would pursue. I can't for a minute think that this House leadership is prepared to tell the sergeant at arms to take John Lewis and the rest of us and drag us off the House floor. And if that doesn't happen, then the only way that this stops is for us to have a vote. And I think we're all prepared to stay at this as long as we need to until we have that vote.
I'm speaking with Congressman Ted Deutsch, congressman from Florida's 21st District. Are you saying, Congressman, that Democrats are prepared to sit in for hours overnight if necessary until they are?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. This is not. This is not some show that's being put on just to highlight the failures of the leadership of the House. This is a very serious effort to act on behalf of the people who sent us here, who rightly expect us to be able to do everything necessary to at least have a chance to vote on those two measures of basic common sense gun safety legislation.
And just to confirm this, you're prepared to sit in overnight for as long as it takes until either the Republicans allow a vote or the sergeant of arms is ordered to essentially arrest and begin hauling away a congressman off the floor of the U.S. House.
I certainly am prepared to do that. I know I can't speak for everyone, but I am confident that I am not alone in that.
Congressman, even if the GOP does allow a vote here on these gun safety measures you're talking about, it seems there's little hope of passage for any of them, even if a vote is allowed. So if that's the case, what does such a vote ultimately accomplish as you see it?
Well, Brad, when we vote in the in the House of Representatives, it's different than in the Senate. In the Senate, they have roll call votes. And in the House, as I'm sure you know, when there is a vote, the names of every one of the 435 members of the House appear on the wall above the speaker. And every member goes to a voting box, puts in his or her voting card, and then goes on record showing to the world whether he is for or she is for or against the measure being voted on. And if we succeed, and if there is a vote to ensure that suspected terrorists cannot get their hands on dangerous weapons, then the world will know, the American people will know, the voters will know which members of Congress stand with them and who stands with the gun lobby. And that's when accountability will start.
Congressman, I've got just another minute or two, and I know you have to get back to sitting down on the House floor. But while I have you here, your colleague, Florida's Republican U.S. Senator Marco Rubio, after months of running for president, decrying the U.S. Senate, vowing not to run for reelection, he has today announced that he will seek reelection to the U.S. Senate after all. I wanted to get any comment that you might have on that, and if you have endorsed anyone in the Democratic primary between Congressman Pat Murphy and Congressman Alan Grayson, who are both seeking that Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate.
Sure. Well, I think it's appropriate. You know, Marco announced that he's running for reelection after telling us over and over. I remember the day that he announced he was running for president, he could not have been any clearer when he said, "I don't want an escape hatch. I'm not looking for another a fallback position. I'm running for president, and that's it." And then he said over and over and over throughout this campaign that he doesn't like being in the Senate, that nothing gets done in the Senate, that he would never go back to the Senate. And now, on the day when we're the Democrats in the House are acting to try to bring forward something that would actually address the crisis that he says has caused him to rethink this, the massacre in Orlando, here we are. He announces that he's running for reelection, and it all becomes about him. Well, there will be plenty of time as we look ahead, and we have an opportunity just, again, to to look at that event and look at his record and with the LGBT community, one of the worst, if not the worst, in the Senate. We have an opportunity to look at his record on guns and gun safety, one of the worst, if not the worst, in the Senate. And we have an opportunity to look in his announcement today. He tried to have it both ways. He doesn't like Secretary Clinton. He doesn't necessarily like Donald Trump. He's going to be on a ticket with Donald Trump. He's going to be campaigning with Donald Trump. And I feel pretty confident in the people that I represent in Florida. That is the Republican Party led by Donald Trump is not going in a direction that my constituents and that the folks in Florida want us to go. And I think what effectively becomes a Trump Rubio ticket, not in the sense that he's running as the vice president, but that they are running together hand in hand all across the state of Florida. I think he can try as he might to run away from the racist, bigoted comments that Donald Trump has made, but they will weigh him down. And I've supported Patrick Murphy from the start. I think he's going to be a great senator.
Very good. And you have Florida's primaries in late August, as I recall. Are you facing a primary challenge this year? And by the way, do you have any fear that your participation in this sit-in will help or hurt in that regard come November?
Well, first of all, it's qualifying week. I will know Friday at noon whether I have a primary and what that looks like. But I, as far as what we're doing today, listen, Brad, I've been pretty clear with the people that I'm so privileged to represent. When I got into this, I told them that the one thing that they could always count on is that I was going to do as much and be as outspoken on behalf of the causes that they and I care so deeply about. And taking action to stem the tide of gun violence is one of those issues. This is not a campaign issue, but since you asked, when I go back home, I look forward to telling people exactly what happened on the House floor, hopefully leading up to a vote and an opportunity, as we said before, to see who's with them and to see who's with the gun lobby.
Congressman Ted Deutsch, Democrat from Florida's 21st congressional district, soon to be its 22nd. Great talking with you, Congressman. And if you haven't been either arrested or the Republicans held a vote by tomorrow, if you need another chance to stretch your legs, maybe we'll talk to you tomorrow if this continues.
Anytime, Brad. I look forward to it.
Greatly appreciated. Congressman Ted Deutsch. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Boy, this is just amazing. Des, we have spent years yelling and screaming that Democrats don't do anything, that they don't have the guts, they don't stand
up, backbone.
Take a stand.
Yes. And now they are sitting.
Yeah, now they're sitting. They're standing for sitting. It's kind of amazing. And the idea that they are willing to stay there, really, color me dubious, that they are willing to stay there until the sergeant of arms essentially arrests them and removes them from the House?
It'll be a very interesting showdown. I find that it would be simple for Speaker Ryan to simply say, okay, fine, we'll have a vote. I doubt that he'll do that either. So it's really interesting to see how this is going to play out.
Well, he could say, sure, fine, we'll have a vote. And then they have the vote and the Republicans vote it down. And that's that. And then they move on. And in an election year, it gets completely lost, as it has year after year after year, as I mentioned to the congressman there. But we'll see. This is kind of unprecedented. We'll keep our eyes on it. Who knows what will happen? All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with at least some of the business we had planned, we had hoped to cover today. Wow, what a day. This is the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Hey, this is Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik.
Talk about going on a break. Have the families and the loved ones of the innocent victims of Columbine had a break from their grief?
No.
How about the families and loved ones of the innocent victims of Aurora?
No.
Have they had a break from their pain?
No.
The families and the loved ones of the innocent victims of Newtown, Connecticut, have their families have a break from their sorrow?
No.
The families and the loved ones of the innocent victims of the shooting in Charleston, South Carolina? Have those families and loved ones had a break from their suffering?
No.
The families and loved ones of the victims, the innocent victims in Orlando, Florida, have these families and loved ones had a break from their horror that we just saw?
No.
Are you tired of the repetitive nature of my question?
Yes.
Are you tired of the repetition of these horrors in our country?
Yes.
I say, no bill, no break.
No bill, no break.
No bill, no break.
No bill, no break.
No bill,
no break.
No bill,
no break. A mighty voice in the House of Representatives.
That was Congressman Matt Cartwright just a few minutes ago, as captured on live Periscope video.
Yep, that was the Periscope app doing the duty that the House Republicans won't let C-SPAN do.
Right, captured by Congressman Scott Peters of California. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. That, of course, is Desi Doyen, our producer here. An amazing day. There was so much news before this sit-in began happening in Congress. I guess we're going to have to push off a lot of that till tomorrow. But this one thing, because I'm looking forward to getting rid of this anyway, Marco Rubio, who spent the entirety of all of those months running for president, as we talked about a little bit with the with Congressman Deutsch there before the break. He spent all of these months running for president saying he hates, literally telling friends that he hates the job of being a U.S. senator. And at the time, back in October of 2015, amidst all of the Republican debates that were going on, the Sun Sentinel, Florida Sun Sentinel editorial board, called on Marco Rubio to resign. If he hates his job so much, if he's unwilling to show up to vote, apparently at that time he had missed 59 votes to date in the year last year by account by Politico. Whereas Senators Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders, who were also running for president, had only missed 10 Senate votes while they were running for the presidency as well. With him hating the job, not showing up, Sun Sentinel called on him to resign. They said it's unconscionable that when it comes to intelligence matters, he sits on one of the intelligence committees, when intelligence matters, including briefings on the Iran nuclear deal, you said we have a staffer that's assigned to intelligence who gets constant briefings. Sun Sentinel wrote at the time in October of 2015, 2 weeks ago, you took to the Senate floor to excoriate federal workers at the Department of Veterans Affairs for failing to do their jobs. You said, quote, there is really no other job in the country where if you don't do your job, you don't get fired, unquote. They then added, with the exception of your job, right, Senator? Your job is to represent Floridians in the Senate. Either do your job, Senator Rubio, or resign it. This was pretty amazing. This was from a newspaper that had endorsed Marco Rubio for the U.S. Senate just a few years earlier in 2010, saying that he's ripping off the taxpayers of Florida, which was fine because Rubio had no interest in keeping the job. He was running for president. He said over and over again he was going to become a private citizen if he did not win the presidency. Well, just after he was called on to resign by the Sun Sentinel, there was a GOP debate where he was asked about this call for his resignation at the time.
When the Sun Sentinel says Rubio should resign, not rip us off, when they say Floridian sent you to Washington to do a job, when they say you act like you hate your job, do you?
Yeah, let me say, I read that editorial today with a great amusement. It's actually evidence of the bias that exists in the American media today.
But do you hate your job?
Let me answer your question. In 2004, John Kerry ran for president, missing close to 60 to 70% of his votes. I don't recall the Sun Sentinel endorsed him. In 2008, Barack Obama missed 60 or 70% of his votes, and the same newspaper endorsed him again. So this is another example of the double standard that exists in this country between the mainstream media and the conservative media.
Now, in fact, he was citing John Kerry and Barack Obama missing votes in the U.S. Senate when they were running for president. Well, in both cases, they had achieved the nomination at that point. They weren't just running in the primary. And the Sun Sentinel responded the next day Once again, the Sun Sentinel editorial board to point out that Rubio, that they in fact endorsed Rubio, that this was not the bias of the media, the liberal media out there, that in fact they did endorse Marco Rubio for the Senate in 2010 and Mitt Romney for president in 2012. They said because we were frustrated by the pace of hope and change in Washington, and they both promised to work hard to make a difference. But that Rubio, ever since he got to office back in after being elected in 2010, had immediately published a book to introduce himself to the nation, and that he, you know, was clearly planning to run for president, not representing the good voters of Florida. They went on in that second editorial, the Sun Sentinel did, to say if Rubio wants to be president, he should go for it, give it all he's got, full steam ahead. But the demands of the presidential campaign have proven too great for him to do his day job, given that Rubio, should resign his Senate seat. Well, he was ready to resign, but all of a sudden now Marco Rubio has decided, now that he's not going to win the presidency, he's decided, oh, I'd kind of like that job after all. Washington Post reports this as reversing a pledge he made a year ago to either assume the presidency or return to private life in Florida. So Marco Rubio is back. I'm sure he will blame the liberal media for pointing out what he actually said, what his words were time and time again. Steve Bannon over at MSNBC says it's not even clear that he's going to make it through the Republican primary at this rate. Right now, apparently land developer Carlos Baruff has spent $4 million of his own money on the Senate race. He said this week he intends to stick in the race through the August 30 primary in Florida and to spend millions more if necessary to win it. He said he intends to push Rubio on whether he'll actually commit to serving a full term in the Senate if he is, if in fact he is reelected. But there's a real question. Will Rubio commit to that full term since it's obvious that he wants to run for president again in 2020 if Donald Trump somehow does not manage to win in 2016? So, you know, the question is going to come up is 4 years from now, instead of filling his 6-year term, is he going to duck out once again for the people of Florida?
It will be interesting also to see if the people of Florida care as much about Rubio now that they've seen so much of him be sort of deconstructed over the campaign, the primary campaign.
Well,
season.
They didn't care for him during the primary.
Right.
He lost his home state by 20 points. In the state of Florida, in the GOP primary, he lost 67. Florida has 67 counties. Rubio lost in 66 of them. So he wasn't even able to win more than a single county in the state of Florida. They're not crazy about him. We'll see if that changes as we move forward, and as it looks like the Republicans could lose the Senate seat in the state of Florida and then give control of the Senate back to the Democrats. We'll find out. In the meantime, another story that we had been working on for today, we're going to have to push it off, is what's going on out here in California, where, yes, they continue to count ballots following the June 7th primary, hundreds of thousands of them, and the race has narrowed. The margin has narrowed. It had been about 13 points statewide. It is now down into single digits for whatever that is worth. Hillary Clinton is leading Bernie Sanders by 9 points. 9 points, single digits at this point. The last announcement from the L.A. County Registrar of Voters, where the most ballots are uncounted, they say they have 178,000 unprocessed provisional ballots and just over 1,000 vote-by-mail ballots. Those will probably be, the vote-by-mails will be done by the time we finish today. The margin has not narrowed all that much, however, in L.A. County. It's about 11 or 12 points at this point. But I will say one upside, and this is part of the story I've been working on. I've been speaking with a bunch of people who are observing or trying to observe the decision whether or not to include many of those provisional ballots. There's a lot of people observing That process, finding concerns, finding problems with which provisionals are being included and which are not being included. I've been talking to the registrar, recorder, county clerk, and others trying to figure out what's going on. I suspect we will have that in an upcoming thrilling episode of the Bradcast. Until then, amazing day. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to Congressman Ted Deutsch of Florida, for joining us here amidst the sit-in in Congress. If you missed any portion of today's broadcast, you can download it, as ever, for free at bradblog.com or over at iTunes, where we hope you'll subscribe. Give us a good review while you're there. Make it easier for everyone else to find us as well. You can drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. That is it. And it really was a thrilling adventure. Until the next one, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. Hey.